Okay, hello. So today I'm going to be presenting on brain injury and substance use disorder. Today is the third episode of Brain Injuries Association's Lunch and Learn series. And yes, today's presentation is brought to you by the Brain Injury Association of Maryland. All right. So before I get into today's presentation, I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Nadja Britton. I am the health educator for the Brain Injury Association of Maryland. And for those who do not know, the Brain Injury Association of Maryland is a nonprofit organization that was started by parents who had children that had sustained a brain injury. They just had a hard time finding those resources in that community. So they were able to find each other and join the national affiliate and began the Brain Injury Association of Maryland. That happened about 40 years ago. And the mission for the Brain Injury Association is to bring health, hope, and healing to thousands of Marylanders living with brain injury, their families, and the professionals that serve them. So for today's presentation, I hope that you're able to gain knowledge about a non-traumatic brain injury, talk about the definition of substance misuse and substance abuse and substance use disorder, and then understand the relationship between brain injury and substance use, and then recognize the effects of substance abuse have on individuals who have sustained brain injury, and then look at these treatment options and considerations. So in order to achieve those objectives, I'm going to have a brief introduction where I go over non-traumatic brain injury, the definition of substance misuse and substance use disorder, and then we'll go into the relationship between substance use and brain injury, and then take a deeper dive into the treatment options and considerations. So I do have some poll questions spread throughout today's presentation. There's not a lot. So I'm going to see if I can pull, or maybe my coworkers could pull up the poll off so we can start this. Okay, great. So the first question is, what is a non-traumatic brain injury? So you can just put your guess in. I don't expect you to know it. So, but if you do, that's great. So just put your guess in. Okay, so I'm going to close the poll in about 5 seconds. So hurry up and get your votes in. Okay, and I'm going to end the poll now. So we had about 13% of you pick that a non-traumatic brain injury is caused by a non-accidental injury. We have that is a damage to the brain caused by internal factors. So that was about 68% of you. Another 13% thought that it was an alteration caused by external force. And then D was the constriction of narrow of blood vessels. So let me stop sharing. Let me close this. And the correct answer is a non-traumatic brain injury is damage to the brain caused by internal factors. So on the screen, I have some examples of what that is. So we have lack of oxygen or nutrition that could cause some damage to the nerve cells. We have exposure to toxin, pressure from a tumor or blockage. And on this slide, I give you some of those examples. For those who do not know, May is Stroke Awareness Month, and stroke is a non-traumatic brain injury. So for those who don't know, a stroke occurs when the blood supply to the brain is disturbed, which leads to death of brain cells. There are two common brain injuries. They're ischemic, which is a blockage in the blood vessel, and this accounts of 80% of strokes. And then there's hemorrhagic. I'm sorry, excuse me. And that is when a blood vessel is ruptured or caused bleeding in the brain. Another type of brain, a non-traumatic brain injury, is a brain tumor. And a brain tumor is abnormal growth in the cells in the brain, and that's a tumor, and a tumor could be cancerous or non-cancerous. And what causes the damage is the growth or the pressure of the tumor on the brain tissue. And then other non-traumatic brain injuries are anoxic brain injury and hypoxic brain injury. So anoxic brain injury is when there is complete disturbance. So the brain is completely deprived of oxygen. And then with hypoxic brain injury, there's just partial lack of oxygen supply to the brain. So those are just a few examples of non-traumatic brain injuries. So there are plenty of more, but I'm just going to be going on to showing or explaining some signs and symptoms of these non-traumatic brain injuries. So with a stroke, there are a couple of signs and symptoms that you want to keep in mind with a stroke. There could be sudden weakness in the face, leg. The individual could have trouble speaking, so having challenging thinking clearly or making decisions. So some cognitive impairment, they could have having trouble seeing objects or reading. So having trouble with vision, having severe headaches. It's often described as the worst headache that that person have experienced. And they could have difficulty with walking or coordination. And then with their face, their face might droop on one side, they may feel numb. So there's an acronym that you can, to help you recognize the signs and symptoms of a stroke. It's named FAST. You wanna look at their face and see if there's any, if one side of their face is drooping, check their arms, see if there's any weakness or numbness. And then their speech, if there's any slur or difficulties, and then you want to make sure if you do see any of these signs and symptoms, you want to call the emergency service immediately because time is of the essence. So for brain tumor, there are a lot of similar signs and symptoms of a stroke, but there's also headaches, but it's more persistent and frequent. There's unexplained seizures. The person might have difficulty with their memory, difficulty concentrating. There could be a trouble or change in their motor skills. So this could be that they're having a hard time grasping objects or even with writing, so their fine motor skills. Their vision could change, so they might have blurred vision, double vision, or their peripheral vision is lost. They might have trouble finding the right words or understanding words. They might have increased nausea or vomiting, change in their sleep patterns, which cause them to be fatigued or sleep disturbances, and then changes in their sensation. So that could be tingling or numbness that they in certain parts of their body. And then anoxic and hypnoxic brain injury, a lot of their signs and symptoms are very similar. So some causes of anoxic and hypnoxic brain injury. So anoxic, again, is when there is the brain is completely deprived of oxygen. And some examples of when this can happen is cardiac arrest, when someone's been choked or suffocated, severe blood loss, or respiratory failure. And then hypnoxic brain injury. So that's when partial oxygen from the brain is deprived. So this could be a near drowning incident or caused by a near drowning incident, a severe asthma attack, carbon monoxide poisoning, and maybe even complication from anesthesia. So some substance use. So is substance use disorder a mental health disorder? We have another poll. Wait, hold on. Okay, there you go. So true or false, a substance use disorder is a mental health disorder. Okay, so I'm about to close the chat, the poll. And everybody picked true. And let me close that. And everybody is correct. But before I go into more of the definition of substance use disorder, I want to define substance misuse and how it differs from substance use disorder. So substance misuse is consumption of alcohol, illegal drugs, or prescription drug beyond extended use. And substance use disorder involves the continuing of substance use despite the health, psychological, and social consequences. So according to the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorder, which is published by the American Psychiatric Association, they provided the criteria for diagnosing substance use. So one is impaired control. So the individual consumes a large amount for a long period of time or extent of the substance. Social impairment, so failure to meet obligation, whether that's at work, school, home, and even the use of the substance can cause interpersonal relationships or problems, which then can also influence that failure to fulfill those major obligations. Risky use that can include physical hazards, so operating under the or driving under the influence or operating any machinery under the influence, and pharmaceutical criteria, or that is when the individual builds up a tolerance. So they need to increase the amount of substance they consume to help them to meet their desired effect, or also if they don't have that substance in their system, they start to exhibit withdrawal, or when that substance is reduced or not or stopped. And so the individual has to exhibit these criteria for at least 12 months to be diagnosed with substance use disorder. So does a brain injury cause, well, this is another poll question. So if I can get some help to put the poll up, I would appreciate it. So does a substance use, wait, hold on, is it gonna come up? Okay, does a brain injury cause substance misuse, or does substance misuse cause a brain injury? Hopefully, you'll be able to Okay, I'm gonna close the poll down. Okay. So it's about 50-50. People think that a brain injury caused substance use, and some people think that substance use caused a brain injury. Well, I'm going to say it's kind of like a gray area. I feel like there's no right or wrong answer for that question. So let's take a deeper dive into that. So before I really go into that relationship between substance use and brain injury, I really want to look at some substances, really focusing on opioids and alcohol. So, but there's many substances and which can be defined in substance misuse or substance abuse or substance use disorder, like nicotine, cannabis, depressants like benzos, or stimulants, yeah, like cocaine. But I'm just going to focus on opioids and alcohol. So for those who do not know, opioids are a drug that acts in the nervous system to help relieve pain and kind of give this sense of relief or euphoria. It's usually prescribed by mental health or healthcare professionals to help manage acute, so pain that's only for a short amount of time, or chronic pain, so pain that lasts over a long period of time. However, this drug is in high potential for misuse and addiction. So there are other common names for opioids, as some shown on the screen. There's oxycodone, there's OxyContin, morphine, fentanyl, and heroin is also an opioid. And the opioids attach to the brain cells and the spinal cord to help suppress the pain, stimulants, and again, provide that feeling of relief and euphoria. However, with opioids, there is that risk of misuse or overdose. And when that happens, the respiratory system is depressed. The person can become unconscious, and it could lead to death if not treated with the reversal medication of naloxone. For alcohol, is a psychoactive substance, and it's found in various of drinks like beer, wine, spirits. And the way alcohol works on your central nervous system, it affects multiple neurotransmitters, which can affect your judgment, so it can impair your judgment, it can impair your coordination, and if consumed in a large amount, like binge drinking, and that is an example of substance misuse, that's where you can see that impair those impaired functions, such as judgment, coordination. So with brain injury and substance use, bringing it together, we have those, again, those non-traumatic brain injuries like anoxic and hypnoxic. There has been studies that's shown or observations that's shown that there is a strong correlation between substance use and brain injury. And based off these observations, such as with opioids, when the respiratory system is in arrest or distress, there could be a cause of no oxygen or partial or limited amount of oxygen getting to the brain, which would cause these anoxic or hypnoxic brain injury. So with that loss of oxygen to the brain, there's parts of the brain that use up a majority of the oxygen supply, such as your frontal lobe, and which can impair your have negative effects that can impair your core social and vocational outcomes. So why does that happen? So for a review, the frontal lobe helps with your executive functioning skills. So your working memory, your flexible thinking, and your self-control. It also helps with your problem solving and judgment. So these are things that you might not think about that you use to help you move throughout your environment successfully. Again, help you with your social interaction, will help you with your vocational goals as well. So I want to share some stats with you. So on the screen, it says that there's 10 to 20% of people or persons with a TBI that develop a substance use problem for the first time after their injury. There's 50% of people who are receiving services for substance use disorder that have a history of a TBI. And as many as 60% of people who require inpatient rehabilitation after a brain injury have a history of substance use disorder. So we can't really say that substance misuse or substance use disorder cause a brain injury, or a brain injury causes substance use disorder. There is that gray area, but we do see these numbers and we do see that there is that correlation. So looking at brain injury and substance use after a brain injury. So when people consume alcohol or other substances after a brain injury, it negatively impacts their rehabilitation. It can change or negatively impact problems with their balance, their walking, and their coordination, which can increase their likelihood of sustaining another brain injury. Negatively impacts their impulse controls, their judgment, which is already impaired by the brain injury. So again, this is another factor that can, that's an example of how these substances can exacerbate the brain injuries or effects of a brain injury with these substances, it can also increase the risk of a seizure. So I have another poll question. Okay. So the last one is a true or false question. There are no tools to assist professionals when helping someone with a TBI or substance use disorder. True or false? Okay, I'm going to close the poll down in a couple more seconds. Okay. Stop sharing. So everybody picked false, so that is correct. So there are assessments like the alcohol use disorder identification test. There's one called CAGE, and there is one called the substance use screening intervention. So these are all tools and assessments that medical providers or medical providers or individual or mental health providers can use when trying to screen for substance use. However, it is really important to use open-ended questions and reflective thinking to even get to the step before assessing. Okay. However, sometimes you might not know or trying to figure out where exactly the individual should seek treatment. And so there is a four quadrant model to help assist assist the appropriate setting when for an individual who has brain injury and substance use. So here's an example of the quadrant. So there's four quadrants, and on one side, you have your substance use disorder, and you're looking at the severity of the substance use disorder. And then on another side, you have the brain injury and looking at the severity of the brain injury. So depending on the severity of both the substance use and the brain injury, it's going to depend on where the individual is getting treatment. So let's look at each quadrant. So the first quadrant, the severity of substance use and brain injury are both low, and the setting for these treatments would be primary care or emergency setting. And for what treatment might look like is more of a screening and brief intervention and motivational interviewing to help with substance use or trying to motivate them into getting more treatment if necessary. Then if quadrant two is when the substance use is low, but the brain injury is high, and this is more of a rehabilitation setting. So maybe right after the person had their incidents, and so they're in this rehabilitation setting, getting treatment for their brain injury. So that's what that setting would look like. However, the healthcare providers should be doing screening for substance misuse. There is stats that says that when someone has misused drugs, misused substances before sustaining their brain injury, they're 10 times more likely to misuse substances after their brain injury. So once if there's any presence of substance misuse with individuals with a brain injury, there needs to be a referral for substance use or substance use disorder treatment following their discharge from the rehabilitation center. Also to keep in mind is that this referral is going to be a little bit more intensive. It's not just giving them the piece of paper and just discharging them. You want to make sure that the appointment is set up. You want to make sure that you put in these compensatory strategies. So whether that is putting the appointment in their phone with reminders or reminder calls of when they're supposed to go for this treatment, substance use treatment needs to be put in place as well. As mentioned before, with the effects of a brain injury, that cognitive, that impairment with their working memory, so they are unable to plan and follow, and may impair them to follow through with going to treatment. So the third quadrant is substance use. When the substance use disorder is high and the brain injury is low, the treatment setting for this individual would be a substance use disorder treatment facility, this one can also be a little tricky. And if you attended any of the previous webinars, you will know that brain injury is, you can't just look at someone and just say that they have a brain injury. And if the person has these cognitive impairments, they may not be able to express themselves and saying, like, I have had a brain injury, or they may not really understand that the criteria of a brain injury. And so they might know that they had a concussion, but they might not know that that is categorized as a brain injury. So it is important when seeking treatment in substance use disorder is to implement these brain injury screening tools. And then also because of the brain injury, that person can have lack of motivation or initiative. So it might be hard for the individual to build that rapport with the therapist or the mental health provider. So it might come off as if they're unmotivated or they don't have the desire to reduce or eliminate their substance use. So here are some accommodation strategies. So you want to assist the individuals So you want to make sure that if you're explaining any new coping skills, you want to make sure you give concrete examples, incorporate visual aids, and trying to present the information in more than one way, multiple times, to make sure you trying to assist the individual to retain that information. If they have any inappropriate behaviors, you want to make sure that you're upfront, straightforward with this feedback, that the behavior that they are exhibiting is inappropriate. And then you want to, again, to emphasize, you don't want to just assume that they're going to be non-compliant because of the lack of motivation or resistance. They just might have that lack of initiative, so they might need that extra motivation. And then for quadrant four, that's where the substance use disorder is high and the brain injury is high. And this would be the treatment setting for this would be specialized brain injury and substance use disorder services. However, especially in Maryland, some of these services are very scarce, very few. So it might look like more of a piecemeal. So it's really important if someone is going one place for their brain injury services and another place for their substance use services, they need to make sure you're collaborating. And so it should be more of a collaborative care system when an individual is in this quadrant. So that was a brief overview, some information about brain injury and substance use. If you have more questions or want more information about brain injury or some community resources about brain injury, you can always contact the Brain Injury Association of Maryland. We are an information and assistance association. So you can call us at our toll-free number, you can email us or visit our website. There is also the Substance Use Mental Health Administration, and there is the National Institution or Institute of Drugs and Abuse. And there you can find some more information about substance use, substance misuse, or substance use disorder. If you want some more information on brain injury, some literature, BrainLine is a really great place where you can get that information. And then for screening tools, you can go to Ohio Valley. They have a good screening tool. It really just focuses on TBI or traumatic brain injury, but it is going to ask about the whole lifespan of the individual. And then the CDC has some screening tools that were mentioned in today's presentation with the substance use. So we have other educational events. We do have some upcoming webinars, but just keep your lookout on your email about when the next one will be coming up. We also provide brain injury fundamental courses. And then we have the brain injury certification and specialist training. And that's the end of today's presentation. If you have any questions or anything like that, just let me know. And if not, and if you are here seeking CEUs or continuing education units, once you exit off today's webinar. It will take you to a survey. Once you complete that survey, a CEU will be sent out to you. Okay, there's no questions. Thank you again for coming. I really appreciate it.
That was awesome, Naja.
Yes, we do. I am planning on having another series, but we're trying to see if we can explore bringing more presenters in. So just keep your eyes out on your email about when our next... Okay. Yeah, just keep an eye out on your email for when the next Lunch and Learn series is going to come out. No problem. All right. Just wait if there's any more questions. If not.